Thanks. I'm Ellen Young. I'm from Texas A&M University, and I'm going to be talking today about a GWAS we've done on plant architecture in our diploid rose collection. So some basic information about roses. They belong to the genus Rosa, which includes about 150 different species. From these species, there have been derived over 10,000 different cultivars, and there's a long history of interspecific hybridization dating back 2,000 to 3,000 years. So there's a wide range of diversity available to plant breeders. Roses, of course, are most famous for their flowers, but we've discovered that plant architecture also affects the desirability and hence the salability of a plant, especially when it comes to garden roses. Generally, when we're looking for good architecture, it's easy to spot but hard to define. When it comes to shrub roses, we're looking for a compact plant that's full. We don't want to be able to see straight through the plant, and we want it to be more or less symmetrical, sort of like the plant shown here. Previous studies in rose architecture have looked at a wide range of traits, some being very detailed, internode length, branching angles, stem diameter, all sorts of very complex things, some of which are difficult or almost impossible to phenotype for in the field, sometimes even requiring manual defoliation of the plant, which when you're also screening your plants for foliar disease resistance isn't really compatible. A previous study, though, did identify plant height and the number of primary shoots as contributing significantly to desirable plant architecture. And these traits are easier to phenotype for in the field, and they also were found to have a high broad sense heritability, so they seem to be feasible breeding goals. So the goal of this study was to identify molecular markers for these traits, plant height and number of primary shoots, as well as to explore some other architecture traits that we hadn't really looked into before. To do this, we collected 74 genotypes, all of which were diploid, and when needed, their diploidy was verified by root squashes or flow cytometry. And we had a distribution of growth types and flowering types. About one-third of our plants were climber or ground cover, and about two-thirds were shrubs. We also had some once-flowering genotypes, meaning they only bloom once in the spring, and some continuous flowering, blooming more or less throughout the growing season. All these were planted in the spring of 2017 in College Station, Texas, which is in central Texas, in a completely randomized design with three replications. After about a year growing in the field, they were pruned to 1.5 feet, approximately, in all directions. We phenotyped them for a number of traits in 2018 in the spring and in the winter, and I'll go through these traits one by one. The first one was number of primary shoots. This was one of the ones we looked at in both the spring and in the winter. And this is just the number of shoots at the base of the plant if you dig all the way into the plant and count what's growing directly out of the ground. We also looked at plant height, which is from the base of the plant to the highest living tissue. Plant length, which is the longest dimension through the center of the plant horizontally. And then width, which we defined as being 90 degrees to length. From those, we also estimated what we call the longest dimension, so whichever of these three measurements was the longest. We did this because we were looking at both shrubs and climbers, when unsupported by a trellis, will generally have much more extensive horizontal growth than a shrub, so we were interested to see if this would be a more fair comparison between shrubs and climbers. From the height, length, and width, we also calculated the volume of the plants, defining the plant as an elliptical cylinder. This is a formula that's often used for shrubs, and so it seemed well-suited to our plants. In the winter, we looked at two additional traits, one of which was the apical dominance index. Since we're interested in the fullness of the plants, we figured that not only number of primary shoots, but the amount of branching will also impact how full the plant is. So to quantify that, we selected three primary shoots per plant, took their length, and counted the number of secondary shoots coming off of them, and came up with this ratio. So the higher the apical dominance index, the more branching we have in the plant. We also, in the winter, looked at the growth habit of the plant, and this was a subjective scale of 1 to 9, where 1 is an erect growth habit and 9 is a prostrate growth habit. All our stats were performed in JUMP, and we looked at a number of different things, including differences between seasons, difference between flowering types, and differences between growth types, as well as correlations between all these traits. We used a REML method to calculate the variance components when we treated our seasons as the environment. And from these variance components, we also calculated the broad sense heritability. All these cultivars were also genotyped for SNPs with GBS, and we also filtered to remove any bad calls. We calculated the linkage disequilibrium in PLINK, and we pruned for excessive LD. We used Structure to estimate our population structure, and Structure Harvester to interpret these results. For the actual association mapping, We used phenotypic values averaged across the reps, and we treated the seasons as separate traits. We used GAPIT to perform the mapping, and we ran a couple of different models in there, including a Q plus K, MLM, and farm CPU. We also experimented with using growth type as the covariate for this analysis, and we determined the best fitting models by examining the QQ plots. So for the phenotypic analysis, we found that we had a wide range of traits, a wide range available to us for all of these traits. None of these traits, except for plant height, were normally distributed, and transformations didn't really help that at all. So any numbers you see here are the raw untransformed data. We found that for all the multi-season traits, there was a significant difference between all of between the seasons. Some of that would expect. We would hope that plant height continues to change over the growing season, so that wasn't really much of a surprise. It was a little bit surprising to see that number of primary shoots did change, actually decreasing over the growing season, which suggests that maybe shoots are actually dying over the course of the growing season, possibly due to weather conditions. We found that there were significant differences between the flowering types, the once flowering and the continuous flowering, for most of the traits, with the exception of number of primary shoots and plant height. Height was especially interesting because we found that that differed from a previous study, which found that there was a significant difference between once flowering and continuous flowering for plant height. This could be due to differences in germplasm, but it also could be to environmental effects, as a lot of roses don't bloom for us in Texas the same way that they do in other places, probably due to the extreme heat. We also found that for all the traits, there were significant differences between the growth types, the only exception being number of primary shoots in the winter. And so this was part of the reason we used growth type as a covariate for our association mapping analysis. Most of the traits were significantly correlated with each other. Some interesting correlations from this table are here. A growth habit we found was not correlated with the number of primary shoots. So what this tells us from a breeding point of view is if we're selecting for a really high number of primary shoots to get that desirable architecture, we're not necessarily limiting to ourselves to a particular growth habit. We could still get the whole spectrum that's available to roses. Growth habit was also not significantly correlated with plant height, which again differed from a previous study, but we don't know what's playing into this, if it's the germplasm or if it's environmental effects. We also found that apical dominance index had a positive correlation with flowering type and with growth type. And what this tells us is that high levels of branching correlate with continuous flowering shrubs. This was something we had sort of observed in the field, but we hadn't actually quantified up till now, so that was nice to see. We also found that apical dominance index was not correlated with the number of primary shoots, which means that if we choose to use the apical dominance index in the future, it's not going to be redundant to use both it and number of primary shoots. They probably are separate components of plant fullness. We calculated the broad sense heritability for the multi-season traits, with number of primary shoots and height having the highest broad sense heritability. These numbers were slightly lower than previous estimates, but they were in the same ballpark. Interesting, longest dimension had a lower heritability than plant height. So that sort of suggests that maybe we should just stick with plant height and throw out the longest dimension. For the genotypic analysis, after all the filtration, we had about 9,700 markers remaining divided across the 7 chromosomes of rows, and the distribution is shown here. Obviously, we have some hot spots of marker concentration even after LD pruning, but we also don't have any huge gaps opening up in the genome, so that was encouraging. We found that linkage disequilibrium decays fairly rapidly within about 250 base pairs. So this is actually within the average intermarker spacing. Structure identified 4 subpopulations as well as some admixed individuals, and these divisions seem fairly reasonable to us based on what we knew about the plant pedigrees. And this, when we used a Q matrix for our association mapping, these results were in the input for that. For the actual association mapping, we did find some significant results despite our small population size. The first of which was flowering type. We found a significant marker on chromosome 1. Now that was great, we were very excited, except that the once flowering, continuous flowering gene for roses is known to be on chromosome 3. So we haven't yet explored what is going on here. It could just be an artifact, it could due to our population size. We did have a peak on chromosome 3, as you can see. Or it could be that there are other hypothesized genes on chromosome 1 that are connected with flowering, and maybe one of those is coming through instead. Also, all the p-values that I'm showing here are significant with a corrected for false discovery rate of 10%. For the number of primary shoots in the winter, which was one of the traits we were most interested in, we did find a very significant marker on chromosome 1, as well as several other markers scattered throughout the genome. The chromosome 7 marker, which is the most interesting because of its high significance, is not in the area of any other known architecture, genes, or QTL, as far as I know. But the other markers we have not explored in full. We actually did find a significant marker for longest dimension, which did surprise me a little bit. It was on chromosome 1, but we have not explored what's in the area yet. That's something that's on our to-do list. This is a summary of all the significant GWAS results. As you can see, we did not find anything significant for plant height, volume, apical dominance index, or growth habit, though there are known QTLs for rose height and rose growth habit. So just for fun, I looked at where the highest markers were for all these traits, whether or not they were significant. The most interesting one to me was for number of primary shoots. The same marker for number of primary shoots in the spring that was the highest was the same as the very significant marker on chromosome 7. However, all of our association mapping results were obviously affected by our low number of genotypes. So top of the list for future directions is increasing the number of genotypes, either by pulling in new cultivars or something else we're doing, which is looking at all of these traits in several biparental populations we've developed, which should get us about 400 genotypes to examine these traits with. We're also going to take this data again this winter and see how it changes over time, and hopefully as well in multiple environments, as we really don't have any information about how these traits change in multiple environments. We're also interested in a better method of quantifying branching. We're not entirely satisfied with the apical dominance index, and we're thinking of including a size requirement for the secondary shoots or possibly an age requirement for the shoots themselves, as we were not always consistent with our phenotyping. In the meantime, though, we're going to continue with a number of primary shoots and see if in these other populations we're looking at we can nail down a marker and hopefully use that marker for marker-assisted selection in the future. So I'd like to thank the people who have helped me with the genotyping and the phenotyping and guiding me on these architecture traits. So I'll take any questions. Yes?
Maybe silly, but I was wondering, I don't know how your rows are managed, but did you have damage or accidental pruning for mowers as they were going through? Because that would certainly have a major impact on ADI, which would also impact pruning.
Right. So the question was whether we had issues with roses being pruned and would that impacting the apical dominance index. The answer is yes. We have lots of problems with the climbers growing out into the center of the row and they get what I called mower pruned. However, for the apical dominance index, we were careful to choose shoots that had not been pruned and had no sign of pruning damage on them. So hopefully we were able to mitigate some of that. Anyone else? Okay, thank you.